Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Detroit Lions Breakdown Podcast. I'm Joe Cagna. With me, as always, is Eric Schlitt from USA Today Lions Wire, and this is the official podcast of USA Today Lions Wire. Hopefully, you didn't all just hear me ruffling my papers. We're going to be talking about the NFL Combine today because that's coming up quick. This week, we're going to start with the offense.
Yeah, we're splitting it up into two different sections because there's just a lot to cover, right? And we know our listeners like the detailed information, and we don't want to rush, so we're going to spend this whole podcast on offense. Next week on defense, lead you right into the on-field drills starting a week from Friday.
All right, and when we break down any, whenever we do a position-by-position breakdown, we obviously always start at quarterback, even though they seem to be set at the position, but hey, anything can happen. So the quarterbacks, we got two on the roster right now, Matthew Stafford and Connor Cook on a futures contract. Matt Cassel's waving in the breeze as a free agent.
Right. So there, when we look at what their approach to the combine will be with the quarterbacks, is they're probably going to identify a guy on day three. And that means you're looking at, the top five or six guys will probably be off the board. So right off the bat, we can probably ignore a handful of players. And that still leaves a good chunk of really some developmental guys. And
even Kyler Murray.
Well, I mean, he's going to go early, right?
We'll get there.
Hopefully the earlier he goes, the better it is for us. But when we're watching the combine and we're looking at quarterbacks, you know, watching Haskins throw or watching Murray throw, that's going to be fine. I don't think those are realistic options for the Lions, even though we've talked last week about how they're still going to say quarterback's in play at eight. Realistically, it's probably not the case. You can probably cross Drew Lock off the board, Daniel Jones, maybe even Stidham and Greer. And then it gets a little bit interesting when you start talking about guys like Brett Rypien, Tyree Jackson. We talked about in the past about Gardner Minshew, who's a fun one. And then some other guys.
Exactly, some other guys.
Yeah, some other guys. And you know, some of them are developmental guys. Some of them, you know, will remind us of other players. But from a combine standpoint, there's not a lot that we can ascertain about the quarterbacks when they're at the combine. It's not like some of the other positions where there's very clear measurables or there's a very clear type of player that we're focused on. With quarterbacks, the only measurables that really factor in is the Lions typically secure guys that are at least 6'2". You know, Matthew Stafford is just over. Connor Cook is at 6'4". Cassel is, I think, 6'5". And a lot of the other guys that they've brought in, tryouts or even practice squad levels, they've all been over 6'2". So that's just a threshold. Now, do I think that that's set in stone? I don't, which is why I don't think it's that big of a deal. Another common thread is they've all had 9 3/4 inch hands. Not a huge thing again. It's, we've seen some of these thresholds. Look, that's more of an old school threshold, that those big hands. We've seen quarterbacks succeed with smaller hands in the current NFL. So it's not something that I think the Lions are overly focused on. It just, if we're looking for trends, that's some physical trends that have occurred in quarterbacks that the Lions have acquired. Another thing is the they'll do a miles per hour at the combine. They'll say how fast the quarterback's throwing the ball. Typically, the miles per hour isn't really consistent, but when they do come out, typically the guys that have thrown have gone over 55. That seems to be like a threshold.
What does that translate to if he's throwing a baseball pitch?
I have no idea.
Like they do at the Little League World Series.
I forget what it is, to be honest, but it's probably like a 55 is probably like a 90-mile-an-hour fastball or something like that. I seem to remember it being something silly like that. Could be more. I don't know if it even translates over as easily as just a simple conversion. So as far as measurables, there's not a whole lot. What scouts will be looking at during the drills is they will be, accuracy is important, but there's a difference between accuracy and completions. What we have to remember is that the quarterbacks are throwing to 50 receivers. Most of them they've never met. And so there's going to be a lot of incompletions that happen at the combine because of unfamiliarity with each other. But it's more about quarterbacks putting the ball on a spot. So scouts will look at, are they putting the ball in the right spot? If they do a sideline drill, are they putting the ball at the proper spot on the sideline, or are they shorting the throw, or is it too low? So it's more about spot placement than completions. They don't really care if people, you know, are missing the targets that often. Another thing, what they will watch, though, is footwork. Like I said, ball placement. And just an overall confidence. Like, what do they do when they're not, throwing the ball to a receiver? Are they relaxed? Are they interacting with other people at the combine? Are they congratulating others? Are they showing leadership skills? They're basically under a microscope in everything that they do. And for a quarterback, that really transcends more to what they're not doing on, you know, throwing the ball, into their, you know, leadership and interactions type skills. So that's about it for quarterbacks. You know, keep an eye on some of the later round guys and some of the names. If you see a name you're not familiar with, it could be a guy that the Lions are targeting.
All right, just a note on your list here.
Yeah.
You have Brett Rippon, the quarterback at Boise State.
Mm-hmm.
You have his NFL type. His comparison is Nick Mullins.
Mm-hmm.
He is the son of Mark Rippon. I put in his comparable have been Mark Rippon, but then sure, might not have been sure the same style, and that is 30 years ago.
So if you look at my board, I have some names highlighted in blue. We wrote an article at Lions Wire, and where I asked the different writers to contribute a name to an article that we would have put a collective article about different targets that we think fit in with the Lions. So for Joe and I, we have these names highlighted in front of us. Those are the names that were recommended by Lions Wire. So Brett Rippon was a guy who was recommended. I think it was Zach Moran that recommended him. A lot of guys went after Tyree Jackson. We've talked about him, the local Michigan guy. Minshew, like I said, we talked about. My guy was Tiamu from Mississippi. Kind of reminds me of a Jacoby Brissett, which we know the Pats drafted. He's a vertical guy who has a little bit of mobility, and that kind of ties into what Bevel's seen in the past. So you have you get a mobile quarterback who likes to throw vertical, and that seems to fit what Bevel has done previously. So that's a guy that's caught my attention. So those are a couple names that I'd keep an eye on. Check out the article at Lions Wire for reference for all the list of names and a little bit more description on them as well.
Worth noting, Brett Rippon, Gardner Minshew, and Tiamu Jordan all are under 6'2".
Yep.
And we don't know their hand size. But moving on from there, we're going to go over to the running backs. I got to bring up the list here to see who's on the roster. No, sorry. You know what? I should have been ready. That was very poor on my behalf. Kerryon Johnson and Theo Riddick are both signed through the season. Kerryon, in fact, through 2021. LeGarrette Blount, Zach Zenner are both unrestricted free agents. Move as they please. Mark Thompson and Kerwin Williams are on futures deals.
So when we're looking at running backs here...
Oh, and don't forget, are we also bringing up the fullbacks?
I mean, in the collective group, yeah.
Right,
yeah. I mean, Nick Bowden, yep. Right?
And Joe Dahl. Nick Ballore.
So I think with Bowden and Dahl and Michael Roberts' ability to play H-back... You know, I don't think they're really going to add to the fullback. From a running back perspective, they're going to need a complement to Kerryon Johnson. And it's possible that they add that complement in free agency. But I believe, because they haven't, you know, we haven't had free agency, I really think the draft is a very viable place for them to get that complement. So when we look at the draft and we're looking at guys in the combine, because free agency hasn't happened, we don't know what level of need that running back spot will be. Will they be targeting a guy on day two because they didn't get a big-name guy in free agency? Or will they get a big-name guy in free agency and then they can shift to day three? So from a combine perspective, we are opening the door basically to everybody, and we're going to try and see, you know, we're going to look at basically everyone except for Josh Jacobs, who's pretty much the number one consensus guy. If a running back's going to go in the first, it's going to be Jacobs probably. And then after that, there's a handful of guys that can go in rounds two and three. And then another good fair amount of guys that are probably going to go like in that rounds four and five. And then there's a bit of a drop off after that. So, but when the when the measurables come out, and what we're looking for from a running back's perspective is the Lions typically have targeted guys who have good explosion, right? They have a good vertical jump and good broad jump together. Now, they don't have to be exceptional in either, but collectively, they need to score well in both. The short shuttle is another one where you're looking for kind of an average score. That measures that lateral agility. So if you hit the average marks for your explosion scores and your lateral agility, well, then that gives you a guy like Kerryon Johnson who, you know, we see that on the field. He moves laterally well. He shows burst. And then, you know, it sets up a mold for the type of back that you're looking for. Historically, with the what we've seen from, like, the Patriots in the past and what Bob Quinn had when he first started and what the types of backs that we had with Caldwell, the three cone was a really important measurement. And it typically is with all the skill players. The three cone tends to be one of the most important drills out there. One thing to note is that there's only been one running back ever that has had a three cone score slower than 7.09 and made the Pro Bowl. And that guy was Philip Lindsay.
Slow with the ever.
Yeah, well, since we track it, right?
That's
right?
Better.
Right, since we track it. So Philip Lindsay ran a 7.12, which is 0.03 slower than that 7.09 marker. And Lindsay went undrafted. And I think one of the reasons he went undrafted is because he didn't show that.
So slow in the three-cone drill.
Well, but I mean, it's what does that mean? Like, if you're slow in the three-cone drill, what does that mean? Well, it talks about your shiftiness.
Changing
direction. Exactly. And so it speaks to the fact that a good three-cone drill speaks to change of direction drills, and those change of direction drills translate into good running backs. And so, like Kerryon Johnson, he's a 7.07, so he's lower than that 7.09 threshold that we're looking for.
Barely,
yeah, just barely. But you know what?
Hand I mean,
that's
timed?
That's the marker. No, it is. I think it might be hand timed. Actually, I think they start with a laser and then it's hand time stopped. But when you go back and you look at guys like in the past, like Amir Abdullah, Amir had a 6.79, which is like elite levels. Like his three cone was like off the charts. But the three cone doesn't seem to be as important for this regime. And they just are looking for you to kind of hit average in multiple spots rather than necessarily excel in one area. So when they're on the field, or when you get the measurables, those are the key numbers. Those are the key areas you're looking for good scores and measurables. The traits you're looking for is you want to make sure that the player is balanced through the hips. You want to make sure that they keep their body under their frame so that they're not getting off balanced or leveraged. Balance is a key for running backs. How is that change of direction? Like, how are they doing with that three-cone score? If they throttle down, they're going to have a lower three-cone score. And if you see them throttle down in the exercises, you can see how that would impact their ability to be successful. Do they keep that acceleration high the whole time? How quick can they get out of the backfield? That's more important for your change of pace backs, or like your Theo Riddicks and stuff like that, more than like a Kerryon. And then catching ability. Do they have natural soft hands, or do they struggle to catch the ball? That's an important factor for the Lions as well. So those are the key areas that the Lions scouts will be looking at when they're scouting the different running backs in this class.
All right, going on to the questions, we'll start with Jay Gala. Are there any third or fourth round running backs that could become an Alvin Kamara-esque steal in this draft? Well, that's a possibility, but just like with Alvin Kamara, nobody knew he was going to be that good.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing. There's a very good possibility that there could be one in this class because, like I said, there's probably not a surefire first rounder. But after that surefire Josh Jacobs number one type guy, you've got about 10 other running backs that are probably going to go in the top 100. And so that means you're probably going to see one of those guys slide into day three that maybe shouldn't have gone in on day three. And there could be an Alvin Kamara type guy in there. Now, most of the guys in this class are power backs, but the one guy that you know I really like, and the guy that I highlighted in my Lions Wire article, is Daryl Henderson. Daryl Henderson from Memphis. He's about 5'9", 200. So he's not overly big, but he's your home run hitter in this class. There's a couple of these guys out there, and right now I think his grade is kind of in that third round area. But he averages 8.9 yards a touch, which is crazy.
But that's an explosive Memphis offense, anyway.
But he's a guy who, when he hits open, the open field, it's over, right? And that's the type that's a type of back they haven't had in this offense since what, Jahvid Best, essentially, right? And so he has runs of over 20 yards. On 12.6% of his carries. So essentially one every nine carries, he's busting one for 20 yards. He's an explosive guy. And so if you're asking me for a impact guy that could be there in day three, Henderson is the guy that I would say keep an eye on.
All right, next question's from Nate Simons, who's a day three running back prospect that you'd want to see the Lions take?
So there's going to be some big names. There's going to be some big names like Rodney Anderson and Bryce Love, who coming into the season were kind of hyped as like the guys that could be top five type running backs. But both of them have been injured, and their injuries are pretty significant with ACLs that it's possible they'll slide to day three. But if I'm looking for a guy with the Lions that I think – that I'd like the Lions to take, I'm looking for Bruce Anderson from North Dakota State. He's basically Kerryon Johnson light. He shows good patience. He has a very similar running style to Kerryon Johnson. He was not invited to the combine, so you won't get a chance to look at him. But that's the guy I'd keep an eye on.
And plus, we'd be adding another guy from the Dakotas,
right?
Or at least would play college ball in the Dakotas. Finally, Tyler Davis. Any update on the running back's coach position? Any potential candidates?
There's not. I don't have any more news on that. I left that question in because I thought it's something that people were interested in. Unfortunately, I don't have any information for you.
All right, we're going to step away from running backs. Did you want to mention? No, I've bullied you enough over the years that you wouldn't bring up Caron Higdon. So I'm doing my job. All right, moving on to wide receiver. Currently under contract, Marvin Jones until 2020, Andy Jones and Chris Lacy for this season. On the other side, we have Kenny Galladay signed through 2020, Deontez Alexander on a futures contract, and in the slot, Brandon Powell still controlled through 2020, and Brandon Riley is under a futures contract. Now, this is a very interesting position for the Lions to be be looking at in the draft, of course. Mm-hmm. The big topic over the last couple days has kind of been, hey, we want to trade for Antonio Brown, but let's table that for right now. Let's talk about him.
Yeah, when we're looking at the combine guys, I know a lot of people are focused on the slot because you lost Golden Tate, and so it's a very natural thing to say, okay, we've lost the slot guy. What slot guy are we going to bring in? But they used Kenny Galladay in the slot sometimes last year in order to get an appropriate matchup. And so it's very possible that they're not just kind of settled in on slot guys. I still think there's going to be a preference to slot guys, but I do think there are going to be some exceptions to the rule where there's some guys that can go vertical that will appeal to the Lions because they might fill a role that they're looking to fill. So slot guys are important, but I don't want to rule everybody out just yet. So when the measurables come in, it's a really kind of a mixed bag on the types of things that we're looking for. It's very difficult to find a guy who meets all the criteria from a measurable standpoint that the Lions are looking for, and not one person really excels in all those areas. It's what we typically find is guys who excel in a subcategory that is connected to another subcategory, and then maybe they're not as good in the others. So let me give you an example. The jump drills typically go together because they talk about explosion. The three cone and the short shuttle typically go together because they focus on agility. If you score well in both of your jump scores, then that's typically the type of the Lions will bring in a receiver who does that. They score well in both. Or maybe they score well in both their agility. But you're not going to find guys that score well in all four. It's really kind of hard to find. Or while they're out there, the Lions typically haven't been targeting those types of guys. So they are basically looking for specialist type receivers, guys who excel in a certain area. The best example of this is Golden Tate. Golden Tate, for a slot guy, most people think Golden would have excelled in the slot type categories. Well, with most slot receivers, they're going to score high in the agility, the three cone and the shuttle. But with Golden, he actually scored high in the jump drills because he was more explosive than he was quick. That's how he gained his separation, by exploding out of routes. And it wasn't about quickness for him. It was more just getting in and out with quick, not quickness, but with big motions. And so that's what we look for with these guys, is we're going to be looking for which guys have collections of scores together, right? So it'll be a little bit harder to identify, and it's not going to narrow the list as much, but those are the types of measurables that we're looking for. Are you scoring well in the things that match up? From a trait standpoint, you want to make sure you're watching their hands. Again, like with the running backs, are they fighting the ball or does it just land softly in their hands? How are they getting in and out of breaks? Now, for slot receivers, you're looking for that acceleration. You want to make sure that they're smooth through the break or even accelerating out of a break, not throttling down. If you're looking for a vertical guy, you're going to be checking out his long speed. Does he maintain long speed as they go? Basically, you're trying to figure out where does the receiver gain his separation? Is it down the field or is it in the short distance? And that's how you can kind of separate between the slot receivers and the vertical receivers. Body control is a big issue, and then ball tracking is a big issue, especially with guys. You know, when you're bringing in a system that focuses a lot on the vertical offense. So we'll get to some questions, and that'll kind of naturally let us get into some guys, some talking points on some different guys. So let's just get into those.
All right, Ben C., what will be the most important drills to watch for from the wide receiver group in regards to what the Lions will be looking for from a slot receiver? You mentioned it a bit.
Yeah, my favorite drill is the gauntlet drill. Right, that's where they catch the ball looking one way and then turn the other way and catch the ball, and they're asked to run down a line and try and maintain that straight line. You can really tell a lot about the receiver from those drills because it shows body control, it shows hands, it shows concentration. It really accelerates a lot of things all in one drill. So that's my favorite. If you're looking for slot guys, though, it's any route that requires a break, right? Is it a quick out? Are they asking them to stunt up? What are they? You know, how are they getting out of that break for slot guys? And then for the non-slots, it's just how do they track that vertical ball? How quickly can they get there? So, different routes will speak to the different types of guys you're looking for.
All right, Jimmy asks, Metcalf, how much talent is there? His highlight reel makes him look like his parents created him just for Stafford, but I have no idea, based on quote-unquote highlights, what kind of talent he really is. What do you guys think? He's my draft crush so far, and no, not because of the pitcher.
He's very legit, and the highlights are fine, but I always caution people. You know, the highlights, you can watch highlights of anyone and it can always show their best traits.
Yeah, you'll see the best.
Right? But with Metcalf, there's a lot of subtleties to his game. Hand placement, the way he stutters his feet, the way he stacks a receiver. There's a whole bunch of little things that he does that help him win that are advanced, I guess. And so, yes, the talent is real, and it's very real for him. So, I think his skills go beyond just the highlights. There's a lot of legit talent there where he could turn into a very freaky player very quickly.
Reception percentage, 63% last season as a senior?
Yeah, 13.
Or as a redshirt sophomore, excuse me.
Yeah, and 13 yard, almost 14 yards a target, because he's got some good power to fight forward too.
All right, Maurice. Why would the Lions look at DK Metcalf if Kenny Galladay and Marvin are looking to be 1A and 1B? Unless you envision a scenario where Marvin gets dealt in a trade.
I think it's very possible, with 2 years left on Marvin's deal, that they're looking for his replacement right now. Look at with Glover Quinn. He had 2 years left on his deal. They drafted Tracy Walker. With Marvin, he's got a big deal coming up, or he's making a lot of money, and in a couple years, you're going to have to pay Kenny Golladay. So it's possible they're looking to draft Marvin's replacement now.
Man, I keep saying Golladay.
Yeah.
It's Golladay. Oh, one of these days, I'll get it. And now you know that the comments get to me when I read them. All right. Anyhow, Charles Townsend. How far does Marquise Brown fall with the Lisfranc injury? That's a nasty one that seems exceptionally difficult to recover from what I've seen.
I wrote an article that said he could be off the Lions board because of it. I've seen articles that say he anticipates being ready for camp, which is very startling because it typically takes like 10 months to recover from. And they think that if he's ready for camp, he may only drop like 15 or 30 spots. I don't think the Lions would touch him if he dropped 15, 30 spots because they saw up close what happened with Ameer Abdullah and how it just zapped him. So I think he would have to fall to a minimum the third round for them to consider him. And even then, he might be too rich with the other options on the board.
Now, the Lisfranc injury, for folks that aren't, that didn't Google it right away and didn't know, Lisfranc injury is top of the foot, right?
Correct. Yeah. The bone's on the top of the foot.
Which is nasty pain when you hurt him.
Yeah, and it impacts your ability to plant and accelerate. And so it takes away a lot of your agility.
All right, next question's from Tracy Walker era, also known as Ed. We know the Lions need to add speed so Bevel can dial up some deep shots. In a scenario where they don't add anyone in free agency, how early in the draft would they need to take a wide receiver to get someone who could be productive right away?
I think they could target Metcalf in the first round. I think that is a realistic possibility. But I also think they could target a guy at every round. Deebo Samuel in the second makes a lot of sense. Maybe a guy like Andy Isabella if he falls to the third. Deontay Johnson from Toledo is really a speed guy. Quickly to address the Isabella thing, a lot of people get focused on his size and they kind of pigeonhole him as a slot only guy. Isabella was an elite track star. Like, he was running at Olympic levels of track speed and hand timed at like 4.27, and so like he can move. So he can vary. If you watch his games against like Texas A&M and Georgia, he can burn. And so his speed is legit. I don't think he's just a slot guy. So speed options with Isabella, Deontay Johnson, those are guys to keep an eye on. And I wouldn't be surprised if they took a receiver in the first few rounds.
All right. Next up, Kyle Klein asked, Bob Quinn and his staff were all over the wide receivers at the Senior Bowl. What do you think they're looking for in a potential day two or three pick?
I think there's a lot of options out there. I don't think they have one thing that they're set on. I think they're very comfortable looking at different options, like we talked about at the top with this section. Slot seems to be the focus, but they can go a lot of different routes. So I don't think anything's off the table at this point.
Do you think that makes them more reactive as far as drafting a receiver would go? Not that, like, we'll target drafting this guy in this round or whatever, but hey, if all of our other targets in this round fail, then we'll look at a receiver, and that's why they're keeping their options open all the way through the draft, or am I just nuts?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. I see guys that, and I think there's a question about this too, that guys that could come in and play. So I don't want to spoil it. So I think we have a question on that. So
all right,
I'm going to hold off on answering that for a second.
Daniel Hall.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you think could rise for speed/measurables, but that team should be wary of for lack of a strong game tape, such as John Ross and Tavon Austin?
Emmanuel Hall from Missouri is a speed guy who a lot of evaluators like. He's from New Jersey. I'm sorry, Missouri. He has kind of a D.D. Westbrook feel to him. Remember, D.D. went really high when he showed off his elite speed. Hall has really good yards per target numbers, and he's a guy who, even though he had Drew Lock throwing to him, he's kind of in that in that second or third tier right now. If he shows off speed, he could see his stock go up really quick.
Do you think Ohio State wide receiver Terry McLaurin, who shined at the Senior Bowl, is worth the hype?
Yeah, I think he is. I think, you know, you tend to get overhyped in like Senior Bowls and you know, East-West Shrines and stuff like that. That happens all the time. There's guys on the defensive ball, side of the ball that had the same thing happen. But I think he's really good. You know, he has a 71% catch percentage. He averages 14.3 yards a target. Those are both really high. Some guys will average high yards per target, but low catch percentages, or high catch percentages and then low yards per target. He has both, and he's a very good special teamer. So I think the hype around him is legit. I don't know how high, if it'll get him up into like the early parts of round three necessarily, but he could be a guy that's really coveted at the beginning of day three, or maybe someone at the end of round three. I'm sorry. He could be covered at the end, at the top of round four on day three, or he could be the type of guy at the round, at somebody says, I don't want him to get past me and takes him at the end, kind of like the Lions did with Tracy Walker, where they're just like, I got to have him because he fits a role that we really like.
All right, Frank Ribble asked, Terry Godwin, who's a Georgia wide receiver, was unstoppable at the Shrine game. Do you think he would be a great day three option at slot wide receiver?
He's okay. There's a lot of other guys that I think are better. I do think he's an option. You know, he's a fast guy. He's going to be one of these guys that is going to appeal if they do miss on a couple of their top targets. But if they end up getting like into rounds like five or six, I think he would be appealing in that area.
All right. Final question about wide receivers from Rich Koenigsegg. Which under the radar fourth round or lower skill position player do you see as the best fit in Detroit?
We have an article. So the next article that we have at Lions Wire in this series of Who and What to Watch is going to be receivers. It's going to drop tomorrow morning, Friday morning. And the guy that I picked fits this bill. The guy I picked was Jacoby Myers from NC State. He's a big slot. He kind of gets overlooked because of Kelvin Harmon, who's really probably a top five wide receiver in this class that most people look at. But Myers is quick, but he is his catch percentage is 78%. That's incredible. And so I really like that out of him. The Lions have met with him already at the Senior Bowl, and he fits in really with what they're looking for, a reliable big slot guy who they could get on day three.
All right, moving on to tight end, which has been the hot button position as far as draft prospects go. And the tight ends, Luke Wilson's a free agent. Michael Roberts is signed through 2020. Levi Toilolo, also a free agent. Jerome Cunningham signed for 2019.
So the measurables that we're looking for with these tight ends, it's almost identical to the receivers. You know, we're looking at the jumps, which are big. The big difference, though, is that the short shuttle is really a non-factor for tight ends. They care more about the three cone than anything else. Remember, the three cone for skill positions is really something that is coveted. For example, the average three cone for a tight end is 7.2. The Lions look for guys that run 7.09 or lower. So they're looking for a significant three cone score. So keep that one in mind when you're looking at the measurables from the tight ends. From a trait standpoint, all the traits that I listed about the receivers, the body control, the hands catching, the ability to get in and out of breaks, those are all applicable to the tight ends as well.
All right. Woodsy's got a question. More important position to fill this offseason for the Lions, slot wide receiver or competent tight end?
Well,
who is your favorite candidate to fill your pick through the draft or free agency? Well, we're going draft today.
Yeah, I think the tight end. I put this question in the tight end section because I think it's the tight end. I think having a clear number one tight end is more important than having a third receiver. And if I'm focused on who my candidate is in draft or free agency, Hockenson is going to be the guy regardless. I like Hockenson, Irv Smith, and Noah Fant all better than any of the free agents that are out there.
All right, next from Brian. As much as I want Quinn to trade that eighth pick, so he could work his proven magic. If we do stay, do you see us taking T.J. Hockenson that early? His in-line and move skills are stellar. Never seen a tight end finish his blocking assignments the way he does.
I still think eight is high for a tight end. In the last decade, only three teams have taken, or only three tight ends have gone in the first, 20 picks or something like that, and two of them were Lions, right? And so I don't think eight kind of fits the mold of the value for the position, right? I think if they trade back, there's a more realistic shot of getting him in the teens. For example, O.J. Howard last year was phenomenal. He went at 19, right? And so, or was that the year before?
That's the year before.
And so that seems more realistic. Now, is he better than O.J. Howard? Probably. But I still don't think that makes him any more than maybe like 14, 15. I think eight's a little rich. Even though he's as complete a tight end as we've seen in a long time.
All right, next up, Waleed Baghdadi. Can the Lions afford to go all out in the early rounds to secure a tight end with all the other holes in the team and the draft being stacked with tight ends? Is it absolutely necessary to go for a top-tier prospect such as Hockenson, Fan Smith? You kind of just said it.
You don't have to, but those guys are better than all the other options that are out there. So I don't think you have to go after these guys. I think it makes your life a lot easier to land one of them, though. I would like to see them draft a tight end in the first two rounds as opposed to landing one in free. Look, we'll see what happens in free agency. If they don't land a top guy in free agency, then, yeah, you got to get one of the top, five guys in this draft, and that means you're probably taking one in the first 100 picks.
Mathis, tight end is a huge need. What do we need to see from guys in the combine for that position? What guys are in the round 1-2 conversation, assuming no trade downs?
So I kind of talked.
Three guys you've mentioned a million times.
Okay. Hockenson, Smith, Fant are the big ones. If we're going into round two, Jake Sternberger from
former
Texas
QB.
A&M. And a graduate transfer. He's got limited tape, so he's kind of flying a little bit under the radar. Travis Kelce type upside, though. He could actually, I wouldn't be surprised if he maybe sneaks into the round one conversation or back end round one conversation. A guy that a lot of people have brought up, but isn't being talked about as much as Isaac Nauta. We've talked about him as being a sleeper that I expected to move up into day two. So put him in that list. Then it's going to be a bit of a question on, does a guy like Dawson Knox find his way into round two? I do think Knox goes in rounds two or three. How high up he goes is still kind of to be determined. Dax Raymond out of Utah State, very specific type of move tight end, can be a big mismatch problem. Could he find his way into round two? That's possible as well. I kind of have those guys kind of on the fringe there between two and three. But those are, six, seven guys I named right there. I would be targeting one of those guys right now.
All right, Charles Townsend. The Lions end up shocking everyone or just a few people by picking T.J. Hockenson in the first, whether at eight or after a trade back, how likely are they to draft another tight end in day three, given the depth there in the draft and the dearth of tight end talent in free agency?
So I don't think they'll double dip at tight end because, you carry three tight ends into the season and you've got Michael Roberts, and I know he has underwhelmed, but they're not going to give up on him, and he's still cheap. So you've got Michael Roberts, and he can fill some of the roles that you want. You're not going to get out of free agency without adding a tight end. They just can't. They can't not add a free agent tight end because then you're really pigeonholing yourself, and you'd have to force yourself to take tight ends early. And they don't want to do that. So you're going to at least add one tight end in free agency. Maybe they add two, one that they feel comfortable cutting if they need to. And then that means if they take Hockenson early or someone else in that first round, now you're not going to spend another draft pick to take a fourth tight end. Because if you take a fourth tight end in double dip, you're either cutting a guy you added in free agency or Michael Roberts, that would mean giving up on him early. So I just don't think they would double dip. It's not saying they won't, but my guess is they target one guy in free agency, one guy in the draft.
All right, Eric Lambert, Donald Parham for a late pick at tight end, red zone mismatch. I'm sure we'll take one earlier than he will go as well, but need a complete overhaul of the position.
You know, they're going to need to add, like I said, they're going to add a couple of guys, and then it could be maybe they add a guy in, an undrafted guy. Could Parham go undrafted? He might. I don't think he will, but if he does, yeah, that's a guy that they could target. The only way I would see them targeting a day three tight end is if they land one of the better ones in free agency. And then maybe you could make an argument for a guy like Parham who's, you know, to fill the Levine Toyolo role at 6'8", right? But he's more of a move tight end than a blocker. So I don't know if he's kind of a specialist. I think you'd be hoping he goes undrafted if you're hoping Parham lands with the Lions.
All right. Finally, moving on to the offensive line, right? The returning offensive, offensive linemen returning and in free agency. Right tackle, we have, let's go left to right. Let's start Taylor Decker signed through 2019, Tyrell Crosby through 2021, Frank Ragnow through 2021, Joe Dahl, which I don't even know why he's listed here, should be listed at fullback 2019, Graham Glasgow 2019 at center, Leo Koloa-Matangi through 2020. Right guards T.J. Lang through 2019, but stay tuned, right, as far as that goes. Kenny Wiggins also signed through 2019, finally at right tackle, with Rick Wagner through 2021, with Andrew Donald as a free agent and Jaron Jones on a futures contract.
So I do think they're going to add a tight end. I'm sorry, an interior offensive lineman. You know, with T.J. Lang getting up in age, and as we've seen, he's more injury-prone than we'd like to admit. Even though I think they have six starting offensive linemen on this team, three of them are offensive tackles right now. And unless they're ready to move Crosby inside as the heir apparent to Crosby, they're probably going to add an interior offensive lineman, someone who can either play center guard or maybe guard tackle, but somebody, I do believe someone will be in play depending on what their plans are for Crosby. So, again, this is one of those positions where we have to have an open mind, and that includes even potentially surprising someone and surprising us by taking one maybe in rounds two or three. Again, planning for the future. Like with Glover Quinn, you get Tracy Walker in the third because you're looking a year from now. Maybe now they're saying, okay, T.J. Lang, a year from now, he's going to be gone. So now we draft a guy in the second or third round who's going to be our replacement for T.J. Lang down the road. So I don't think we can rule anybody out right now, and that leaves a lot of guys open. The big measurable to keep in mind is the short shuttle. The broad jump is important. The 10-yard split is important, but you're just looking for average scores on those. The short shuttle is really the key. And the number you want to be paying attention to is 4.78. 4.78 is that minimum threshold. They're looking for all of their interior guys to score under that minimum. So the average is 4.78. They're looking for everyone to score under that. Of the starters, T.J. Lang, Glasgow, and Ragnow, they all are easily under that 4.78. Ragnow was 4.51, Glasgow 4.63, and Lang was a 4.42, which is scary fast. And again, this measures that lateral ability. And when you're working on the interior, you have to have that ability to move quickly and reactively, and that short shuttle is what measures it. So that's a huge one for them. That's the key one that you're paying attention to. 10-yard split's great. Kind of looking for that 1.81 or 1.8 in a range, but that's that's not as significant as the short shuttle, but it is one that we've seen correlate to everybody on the offensive line. The only ones that don't pass in this area on the offensive line are Leo Koloa-Matangi and Rick Wagner, surprisingly, is just off of the tackles version. But everyone else is clearly secure in that 4.78. So that's the big one. When you're watching them during the drills, you want to focus on their hips. You want to make sure that they're staying square and they're staying under control. They're not lunging. Their knee bend is good. If they bend at the waist, that shows that they're going to overextend, and that's a red flag. When they kick slide, is it smooth, or do they cross their feet when shuffling? It's a little bit more important for tackles than interior guys, because they don't typically have to kick slide like that. And then just how do they read and react? Like, how are they responding to the coaches? Are they following directions? So those are the key things during the drills to be watching.
All right, the first question is from Vince Veal-Haber. What agility drills and numbers will Bob Quinn look for in an interior offensive lineman?
So I just point out the numbers, but the drills, there's change of direction drills where they're asked to respond to what the coach says. And so they need to, they're going to like point you in a direction, and then you have to react to that reaction that the coach is pointing you to. So change of directions are big. There's a pull drill, which focuses on interior offensive linemen pulling.
Pulling and trapping.
Which is something the Lions haven't done a lot, but could do in the future. There's a mirror drill where you have to follow the rabbit. That's more of a pass pro. That's a fun one. Kick slides, again, are more for tackles, but if they're looking for that guard tackle guy, maybe the kick slide's important, but it's probably not going to be as significant for what the Lions will be watching this time around in the combine.
Detroit Lions Ego asks, do we fill our offensive guard need in the draft or in free agency?
I still think the draft provides them some talent that they can develop, whereas if you pay a guy in free agency, you're probably getting another you're probably going to get, I don't know, you kind of get what you pay for, right? Do you want to overpay for someone to be a backup to TJ Lang if he returns? Or do you want to, pay a medium price to a guy like Kenny Wiggins, and then you get what you pay for, and he's kind of an below average starter if you need to rely on him. So I'd rather see them attack a guy in the draft.
Jimmy asks, Jonah Williams is an offensive lineman, offensive tackle, left tackle,
yep,
out of Alabama, and is a top 10 talent without any talk of the Lions considering him. We absolutely need more offensive linemen. Why isn't anyone mocking him to us?
Because it's not clear, I don't think, that we need an offensive lineman.
There's bigger needs in a lot of other places.
Yeah,
one could argue the offensive line.
You've got a young starter at left tackle, a young first-round starter at left guard. You've got a third-round draft pick who's a young starter at center. You've got an aging TJ Lang, who is arguably the best of the bunch at right guard. Now, if he doesn't come back, then yeah, it's a big need. But then at right tackle, you paid Wagner to be the highest paid right tackle in the league a few years back.
Drawing a lot of different results.
Then you drafted Tyrell Crosby, who is a starter in waiting. So you've got six starters. Now, if TJ Lang doesn't come back, you've got five. But if Crosby's not a guard, then you're going to need a starter. But if you take Williams and then TJ Lang returns, who are you benching? I mean, are you going to play him at right tackle and then bench one of the highest paid right tackles in the league?
A Lions thing to do.
No, but I don't know where you play him, right? I mean, like,
sure.
I mean, maybe if the Lions weren't picking at 8, and if they were picking like in the 20s, you could do a Riley Reiff type thing where you take a guy and he's in waiting. But they're not in a position. And with Lang being that question mark, I don't think Williams. And plus, you don't typically take a guy at 8 who's transitioning from tackle to guard. You're expecting to take a guard who's established at guard. Now, the only player I can think of that switched from tackle to guard and was picked in the top 10 is the guy from Washington, Sheriff, right? He's it. Other than that, I can't think of another guy. Now, if you're telling me you think Williams is him, then you can make an argument for it. But again, if you have TJ Lang coming back, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you'd almost be forced to cut TJ Lang at that point. And then you're cutting your best offensive lineman, injury prone or not. So I think that's why we're not seeing offensive linemen really mock to Detroit anywhere in the first few rounds, is because people don't think it's as big of a need as some of the Lions fans do, I guess.
All right, Brandon Kerr has the last of the offensive line questions. I love Garrett Bradbury from NC State,
sure,
who's a center guard, but I don't think the Lions will be able to get him. The other one that I really have a draft crush on is Chris Lindstrom, Lindstrom, mm-hmm. actually, from mm-hmm. Boston College. Would either one of these guys fit with the Lions? What would fit with the Lions want? And what do you look for in the combine measurables?
Yeah, again, from a measurable standpoint, we're going to watch that shuttle. We're going to see what if that short shuttle is under 4.78. If they come in under that, then that's going to be a check mark for them from a measurable standpoint. From a film standpoint, yeah, they both fit. I think both of them are going to come in and be like day one starters. So I would not be surprised if either of them would be on the list. I think it's going to require a second, and maybe he might not even be there for Bradbury. Lindstrom could be there a little bit later. If he's there in the third, he's a lot more fun, a lot easier to get to. Like with the receivers, there's maybe one guy at the top, or the running backs, sorry. There's maybe one guy that's kind of in that fringe first round, and then there's a whole bunch of guys that are in that second and third round range. So I think you got like 10, 12 guys that could go in the top 100, and they could target one of those guys that could probably step in day one if Lang's not ready or if they need somebody. So they don't need to take one at 8. I think you can get a guy a little bit in the first 3 rounds.
All right, let's make this a quick answer. Derek's got a question here. Are we expected to get any additional comp picks this year?
No.
Are the 9 projected picks set in stone, that comp pick from Miami for Akeem Spence? And do you see the Lions using all 9 of these picks, or will they use a few of the 6s and 7s in trades to move forward to get who they want?
So they should not get comp picks. The formula from the NFL isn't published, so we don't know exactly what it is. But based on previous years, we're not expecting to get any comp picks. The 9 picks, I believe, are set. It will become official later, but Spence played all 16 games and started all 16 games for Miami. So whatever the parameters were, I'm sure he more than likely met them. And so we should get that pick for him. And then as far as using all 9, I don't think that's necessarily true. I think they will show some movement. I think he will. Bob Quinn, if he wants to move up or down in some of the early rounds, could trade one of these 5th and 6th, 7th round type guys to move up and down. So I don't necessarily think we walk away with 9 draft picks, but I wouldn't be surprised if we used them all. In his first year, he used every one. And then we saw a little bit more movement in the previous year, in the years after that. So I don't necessarily think we're going to walk away with 9 draft picks.
All right, that's it. We've run out of time.
Yeah, that was fast for me. I felt like it moved quick.
It did. We moved along. All right, so we got the shout-outs. Give us the shout-outs.
Yeah, we're up several more ratings again, which is incredible. We really like that a lot. An old writing buddy of mine, Mike Rizzo, we used to write together at my former site. He gave us a rating. Appreciate that, Mike. Chris Robbins, who we interact with on Lions Twitter all the time. Rich K13 left us a nice thing, and then Loyal Lion just left us one recently as well. So another 4 reviews, and I think, what, 8 more ratings? And so
yeah, we're getting tons of them. They're rolling in. Keep them coming, everybody.
Yeah, the competition's getting fierce, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, all these are helping. We appreciate you guys. You know, like Chris had to specifically, I think, create an account just to do it. So we
thank you.
So thank you guys.
And we thank everybody else who's listening and didn't happen to rate. We appreciate everybody listening to us. It's great. We've really started to grow something here.
Yeah.
And next week, you could probably figure we'll talk about the defense and what we look forward to in the combine. And that's it. So until next time, let's go Lions.